From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Governor Malibu comes off the rail with a late bid, but it is a shocker. A maiden has won the Jim Dandy. Plowman went wire to wire.
What a horse race. These two nose and nose to the wire. Beholder on the inside, Stellar Wind on the outer. Stellar Wind's going to beat her.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
The Betfair.com Haskell has turned into a thriller. An Exaggerator has gone right on by. A tremendous performance from Exaggerator under Ken DeSormo to win it by two.
Oh, my goodness, look at Frosted today. Frosted's 10 in front. Frosted is absolutely rubbed in the Met Mile. He was wrapped up.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, coming to you from our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and welcoming everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius XM Channel 93, and all of you tuning in on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and those of you tuning in worldwide at horseracingradio.net. JT, just 48 days, 6 hours, and 23 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Santa Anita. This is our final Equine Forum program of the summer season. Of course, the first day of fall coming up later this week, so the next time folks will hear from us, it will be the fall season, which means the road to the Breeders' Cup heats up in earnest. It also means that we get set to kick off, believe it or not, the road to the 2017 Kentucky Derby, which begins later today at Churchill Downs.
Well, I don't think the road to the Kentucky Derby really kicks off until after Breeders' Cup myself.
Well, the first points race for the Derby series being contested later today.
You know
today.
How the points thrill me. So, one thing at a time. I know you're a big calendar watcher, but I'm...
Yeah, hold on. I'll get you the countdown
I'm too old
to
watch the
Derby
calendar.
Too. Wait, I can get you that one, too. Hold one second. I'll get you that. Because I know you're waiting to find out.
I can't wait. Although, in truth in advertising, I started my list for Kentucky Derby hopefuls yesterday.
See? So you're in the mood. You're.
I'm not in the mood. I'm just doing my work.
Oh, well, put it this way. You have 231 days, 10 hours, 31 minutes, and 18 seconds to get ready for that Derby.
So now people know that the preparation that I put in for these things is ongoing and lasting, right? It never ends. It goes from one to the other to the
other. It just continues on. And that's right. You know, that's the nature of the beast when you're looking at the world of thoroughbred racing today. You go right from the Triple Crown, and then as soon as the Triple Crown ends, think about it. On Belmont Day, you have a couple of win and you're in races for the Breeders' Cup, right?
Right.
So once the Triple Crown's over, the focus shifts immediately from the three-year-olds in that Triple Crown trail right to the Breeders' Cup, and then it's Breeders' Cup all the way through. And now today you get a little bit of an overlap because you have some Breeders' Cup action, you have the road to the Breeders' Cup in full swing, and now you start to get that first points race for the Derby, so it starts all over again, and it very much is a cyclical business now.
Yeah, June is the transitional month, basically, because the first part of the year, the first 5 months is all towards the Derby, and then the last 5 months is all towards the Breeders' Cup, or actually 4 out of the last 5 months, because Breeders' Cup's in November, so December is not a big deal. This year might have a little different focus with the Pegasus race coming up.
Yeah, good point.
So it could last into 2017, but it doesn't really matter. It is what it is, and we're going to be at all those places, and so that's lots of fun stuff to look forward to.
And there will be some races this afternoon that are going to impact that Breeders' Cup World Championships, no doubt. I mean, when you have a horse like the Queen of the Turf, as they call her, Champion Teppan, going to the post at Woodbine in the Woodbine Mile, she's a huge, huge favorite in there. Mondialise was expected to challenge her, the defending champ in that race. He's not in there. So you have Teppan facing a short field. She really, on paper, lays over the field, but, they don't run the race on paper.
Yeah, what happened to Mondialise? How come he didn't run?
You know, it's funny. I was going to ask you that same question.
I have no idea.
We have been promoting that for weeks.
Right.
And I think the Woodbine folks were expecting that Mondelez was going to go in that spot.
Absolutely.
And just called an audible, I guess.
Well, maybe they decided to heck with it. Or maybe is he going to run in the Breeders' Cup?
I would assume so. Yeah. He has to be on track for the Breeders' Cup, right?
You would think. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. But, yeah, that was kind of a surprise that he wasn't in the entries.
Well, you have the Woodbine Mile, part of a stellar program at Woodbine. Tonight, you have the Charlestown Oaks, a Grade 3, which is always a really fun race. And you're going to hear that coverage with us on the network tonight. Anthony Stabile and Ellis Starr will bring you coverage of the Charlestown Oaks beginning at 9 o'clock Eastern. You can tune in worldwide at horseracingradio.net. That broadcast available exclusively on our website, your computer, your smartphone, your tablet. Take us with you wherever you go, horseracingradio.net. And here we go. Todd Pletcher, Javier Castellano, back as the heavy favorite in the Charlestown class, the Charlestown Oaks.
Yeah, not a surprise. And Javier's got a couple other live mounts on the program, so be fun to watch that this evening.
We're going to talk about that Charlestown Oaks later in the program. Eric Zimney, who is the Vice President of Racing Operations at Charlestown, is going to join us right around 9:25 Eastern time. We're also going to visit with trainer Mark Cassie to talk about Champion Teppan and talk about his entrance in all the other big races across the country today because, Jude, he is loaded. He has the morning line favorite in several of those graded stakes, and if he doesn't have the morning line favorite, he has a horse that's maybe second or third choice on the morning line, so... if he was a jockey, they would say he was well mounted. So I don't know what you call a trainer when he's running horses like this, but
lucky,
very fortunate.
Yes, and he, you know, he had kind of a rough Saratoga meeting. It didn't exactly go the way as planned. So it's time for him to switch gears and get in the winner's circle on a regular basis again.
Teppan can do that for you.
Well, she could. She could.
You think there might be some question marks surrounding Teppan today?
I think there's a lot of question marks surrounding Teppan. I mean, you know, she wasn't training up to snuff at Saratoga. They passed a couple of races, you know. Cassie said he was encouraged by her last work. To me, that wasn't very Cassie-like, but we're going to have him on, so... We'll hear what he has to say and evaluate after that.
How big of a concern is it that, you know, maybe she wasn't training the way you would like to see her train when she was at Saratoga and then kind of got back on track, but that little spurt where she wasn't training?
Well, I mean, horses go through things, you know, just like people do. It could be mental. Maybe she didn't really like Saratoga.
Yep.
You know, we brought this up to Cassie a long time ago about her not liking Saratoga because she got beat twice at Saratoga.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, right? And she gets up there, she's not training that good. Maybe she doesn't like it. Maybe she's a Delmar girl, you know? Or maybe she, you know, I don't know. Horses are funny, and they have their little quirks, and Saratoga might not be her favorite place. And maybe that's why she didn't train. Oh, you brought me back here. I got beat twice here. I don't really want to be here.
Yeah.
I want to be somewhere else. That could have been, I don't know. She finally got out of her bluesy state and started breezing good again, and so she's ready for this race. I mean, I'm sure she's ready. I'm sure she's 100% physically. Mark would not even think of running her if she wasn't. But you know, whenever a horse misses time or goes through a funk, you know, it's a cause for concern, and especially if you're going to bet on her at 1-2, you know, looking at it from a horse player's point of view, I mean, do you want to take 1-2 on a horse that, you know, had a hiccup during the summer? Not me.
Right.
But
yeah, you're better off trying to find somebody. You're not going to make any money anyways if she wins.
Right.
You're better off trying to find somebody else that if she doesn't bring her A game today and she gets beat, then you can make a little bit of money.
Yeah, I think today, if you're ever going to try to beat her, I think today would be the day, you know, and she'll probably win by 10, you know, that's just how it goes. But because she's a very, very talented filly, but you know, it's one of those situations where she's not a guarantee today at 1-2. 1-2 on the morning line, that means she could be even less.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
All right. Which road? This is our poll question for this morning. You can weigh in at HRRN on Twitter. Which road has you more excited this weekend? Is it the road to the Kentucky Derby, which begins with the first points race at Churchill, or the road to the Breeders' Cup, which, as we know, is in full swing as we edge closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships in early November. So which road are you more excited about this weekend? The beginning of the Kentucky Derby Trail or that road to the Breeders' Cup? Weigh in at HRRN on Twitter. Speaking of the road to the Kentucky Derby, Darren Rogers, who is the Director of Communications at Churchill, will be with us toward the end of the program today at 9:45 Eastern. He'll talk to you about that fall race meet or the September race meet at Churchill, and he'll tell you all about the graded stakes action today. And right around 8:35 Eastern, we're going to visit with Stuart Fitzgibbon from Castleton Lions. They, of course, stand champion Gio Ponti and Justin Philip. Now, Gio Ponti is off to a rocket start at stud. Not only does he have Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs, but was represented a few weeks ago at Saratoga by the exciting sprinter Dre Fong for trainer Bob Baffert, who won the King's Bishop. So we're going to talk to Stuart about all the success they're having with Gio Ponti and the young babies coming forward for Justin Philip. We'll do all that when we come back. There's more ahead on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Adina Spring Stallion Point of Entry, a five-time Grade 1 winner viewed by many to be the heir to Dinah Former's global legacy, with first crop weanlings already realizing six-figure sums at both Keeneland and Tattersall's in Newmarket. As a racehorse, Point of Entry was a truly great American turf horse, becoming the first since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined 9 lengths.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by 4 lengths. A Hall of Fame ride it was. Point of Entry wins the Sword Dancer, and they're coming down to the finish. And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a 5-race winning streak.
Point of Entry returned the following year to win the Grade 1 Gulfstream Park Turf and Grade 1 Manhattan, and also displayed the ability and the pedigree to perform at the highest level on dirt. Point of Entry, standing at Adina Springs in Paris, Kentucky. Visit adinastallions.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, what's going on in the insurance world?
Mike, with the yearling sales fast approaching, we offer Fall of the Hammer coverage to buyers for their auction purchases.
Why is Fall of the Hammer so important?
When the auctioneer drops the gavel and the buyer signs a sales slip, ownership transfers. There is an immediate exposure to the buyer for the purchase price. By calling our office prior to the sale, we can arrange for immediate protection, so there is no gap in coverage.
Are there any other exposures?
Absolutely. There is liability exposure in the event the yearling should cause bodily injury or property damage to others. An equine owner's liability policy will provide just the right coverage. It's stuff like this that keeps me awake at night.
Thanks, Joe, for speaking with us today. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Join us at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races on Saturday, September 17th for the 8th annual Race for the Ribbon program. Combining the excitement of high-stakes racing with raising money for the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure West Virginia affiliate. The night features 13 races, including 8 stakes and nearly $1 million in purse money, highlighted by the Grade 3 $350,000 Charlestown Oaks. Racing kicks off with a special first post of 5 p.m. Eastern. That's the Race for the Ribbon program in the $350,000 Charlestown Oaks, coming up on Saturday, September 17th.
Since 1940, the National HBPA has provided thoroughbred horsemen with a unified voice, representing their interest and needs before state and federal governments and improving business conditions for thoroughbred horsemen and their employees. With a seat on the board of major industry organizations, the National HBPA continues to support more than 30,000 individual owners, trainers, breeders, and backstretch personnel throughout the United States and Canada. Contact CEO Eric Hamelback to let your voice be heard and support the National HBPA by visiting hbpa.org.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
So Covey Trace and Can't Be Dazzled continue to duke it out as they pass the quarter-mile pole, a half in 45-1, and they come to the top of the stretch, a furlong and a half to go. It's Can't Be Dazzled ratcheting up the pressure on Covey Trace. Eighth of a mile left, Covey Trace has put away Can't Be Dazzled. Running down the center of the track, Northern Connect is making good ground. 16th left, Covey Trace and Brian Hernandez drawing away in deep stretch, and Covey Trace will win it by about five in the end. Can't Be Dazzled just held Northern Connect for second. And then Twirl Girl was fourth, 1:15-2.
Covey Trace with a big victory at Ellis Park back on August 14th and a winner by 5 1/4 lengths that day. Covey Trace back in action against five other rivals in tonight's Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks, which of course you're going to hear right here exclusively on the Horse Racing Radio Network beginning 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Anthony Stabile, Ellis Star, going to have that coverage for you. Make sure you tune in worldwide at horseracingradio.net. And Covey Trace, 7-2 on the morning line. That's good for the second favorite position behind only Sophia's Song, who is even money for Javier Castellano, Todd Pletcher. And she's been very, very good throughout much of her career. She was beaten last time out at Saratoga, finished second that day, but she's done virtually nothing wrong. Five starts for Sophia's Song, 3 wins, 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, excuse me.
You get all choked up talking about her.
Yeah, that's right. I sound like Hillary. Every time I think of Trump, I get allergic.
Just don't pass out on me.
That's right. Well, you've never had to load me into a car, I can tell you that much.
The Pope Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
We've done that a couple of times.
We have. We have
done we've kind of fallen into the backseat
of the Pope Mobile. Thank God for the Swiss Guards.
Well, that should be a good race tonight at Charlestown. Again, the big race at Woodbine, the Woodbine Mile, later this afternoon. But earlier this week, and even last weekend when we hosted this show from Keeneland, we focused on the future stars of the sport with the Keeneland September yearling sale. And Jude, I think by all accounts, this has been another gangbuster sale at Keeneland. You look at the numbers and forget about the gross, because the gross is down over what it was last year. But through the first four sessions, they've sold 100 plus fewer horses than they did last year. So that makes sense. But the numbers that are always very telling to me are the average and the median. And the average for 588 horses sold at Keeneland through the first 4 days of the sale is up nearly 10% to $270,000 over a year ago. And then the median has held exactly the same as it was last year at $200,000. I think those numbers very telling and very positive.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are surprised that this sale is as strong as it is. Some of the sales around the country have been rather on the weak side, but I was encouraged when I saw the results from California, because their sale business has been into decline for a while, but they had a very strong sale, and I thought going into this one on the heels of that, it was going to be pretty good. A tremendous level of horses being offered, lots of nice horses. And so, you know, a bunch of my friends who are consigners and breeders are very happy with the results for the horses that they've sold, so I think it's a pretty strong sale.
What does that mean for the thoroughbred industry? Because people hear us talking about this, and if they're not familiar with what goes on at the horse sales, that's a whole different world than the racetrack scene. What does that mean when you have a good yearling sale for things moving forward as an industry as a whole?
Well, traditionally, the Keeneland September yearling sale is a barometer for the industry, and it means that people are interested in racing and improving their bloodstock, and you know, that the interest in horse racing has not waned amongst the participants.
Yep.
And so I, you know, it's a good sign for our business going forward.
There was a situation that occurred on Tuesday of the Keeneland sale, the second session, and we actually had an email from a listener who asked us if we could touch on this morning. This listener attended their first sale last Monday, which of course was opening day, and claimed that they had way more fun than expected. And that's a direct quote from this particular listener. Hip number 383 was, it turned out as an RNA. There was a situation involving this horse, which sold for apparently $1.9 million on Tuesday afternoon. Talk about that situation and what exactly occurred, because this person, very unfamiliar with that process.
Well, it was a situation where the reserve on the horse was misconstrued somehow to the sale company. So this happens a lot.
Meaning the minimum that you're going to take if you're selling that horse, the reserve.
Right. You can sell a horse without reserve. You can, or you can say, I won't take less than X amount for a horse. And usually that's conveyed to this sale company, in this case, Keeneland. And it's, you know, etched in stone. And they will not sell the horse if it doesn't meet its reserve. So this rarely happens with a $1.9 million horse, because everybody's, you know, a horse that's anticipated to bring $1 million or more, people are very, very careful with it. Sometimes it happens with lesser horses. And a lot of times owners change their mind over the course of the sale based on what's happened. So you may have an original conversation with somebody saying, okay, you know, we think this horse is worth 25. We're going to put a $20,000 reserve on him. Or, you know, if the sale's going crazy, you may say, well, you know, we know now he's going to bring 25. We're going to put 32 on him, whatever it is. And it sometimes it varies back and forth. There's a lot of communication between the consignor and the sales company and the owner of the horse. So it once in a while it gets screwed up. I mean, I've been on the plus side and on the minus side of this. One time, there was a horse that I understood the reserve was 15,000. I actually signed the ticket for 8. The owner got upset. The wow. consigner came to me and said, the owner, you know, wants you to give him the horse back. I go, I'm not giving him the horse back.
Is that a disconnect that occurs between the seller or the consigner and the actual sales company, which in this case would be Keeneland?
Usually that's the case. Like, there's a miscommunication, and sometimes, the consigner will have a list of reserves, and sometimes it's human error.
Yep.
Sometimes it's forgetfulness. I mean, things happen. And sometimes it's the sales company's fault too. It's miscommunication is what it is.
Human error.
Human error. Yeah. Almost always, you know, human error. So that's the problem. You know, and Mrs. Pope, who owned the horse, she was upset because, first of all, you know, the horse didn't sell. It wasn't the kind of way she does business. Everything's above board. She doesn't need the money.
Yep.
So, you know, it was a black mark on everybody involved. But it's one of those things that happens. And, you know, she was willing to sell the horse at the reserve price to anybody that wanted. And I don't know if the transaction's been
right.
done or not. And, you know, worst comes to worst, she keeps a really nice horse
right.
in her stable. But, you know, her plans are to keep the fillies that she breeds and sell the colts. She's trying to build a tremendous broodmare band and has done an excellent job of that. So, you know, it's just an unfortunate thing. It happens. And, you know,
not typically with a horse of this stature and with this amount of money on the table.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It,
but most there, let's face the facts. Most horses are not $1 million horses.
Right. Yeah.
So they spotlighted this. If this was like a, you know, next Wednesday or something, and there was a bad reserve, nobody would know about it.
At $40,000,
the people, yeah, the people involved. But because it's a $1.9 million, and of course, you know, the way right. the sales are now, the press all gravitates to the person that sure. signed the ticket, and it, you know, so it's a snowball effect, and it was a big deal at the time, but we've forgotten about it now.
Well, and I think you bring up a very good point, too, when you said she was willing to sell the horse at the reserve price that she had previously set, the actual reserve price, because that's the other question a lot of people will ask is, and I actually saw some of that on social media after this occurred, what happens now?
Yeah.
You know, what happens to the horse now? And she still owns the horse.
Right.
She
right.
bred it. She still owns the horse. She can still do whatever she wants.
She could put it in another sale. I'm sure,
right.
you know, I'm sure that they would like to sell the horse down the road if she really wants to sell the horse. And, you know, sometimes you get lucky that, you know, racing's that kind of a business. And sometimes the mistakes are what really get you to the winner's circle or to national prominence.
Yep.
Sometimes, you know, Seattle Slough comes to mind. Like, they could never sell Seattle Slough, and how great of a horse was he?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one of those things. And thankfully, everybody involved, it wasn't going to be a life changing deal either way. Yep. You know, because if it's me and I don't get my million, I'm going to be really, really sad.
That's right.
But, anyway, that's the way it goes sometimes. Nothing is ever cut and dried in racing. And once you figure that out, it makes your life a lot easier.
We also saw the half brother to Champion Beholder sell for $3 million this past week at Keeneland too. And, you know, you look at pedigree, hard to beat a half brother to Champion Beholder, but yeah, good things happening at the Keeneland September yearling sale, and congrats to everybody involved. And keep in mind, what people don't see when they just watch races on television, when they listen to them with us on the radio, and you're just following and handicapping the races, if that's the only side of this business that you see, you're missing a massive part of what the world of thoroughbred racing is all about. And that's the backbone of this industry, with the breeders and the buyers and the owners of these horses, the consigners who bring these horses to the sale. There is a tremendous, tremendous amount of work that goes into it, right from the time that the horse, that the stallion is bred to a mare, all the time, right from there, all the way through till the foal hits the ground, and all the way through till the horse sells. Tremendous amount of work, tremendous amount of money involved, and it's so good to see these people do well when they come to the horse sales.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's a lot of fun, a lot of excitement at the sales, especially in the first book, you know, when all the big pedigrees are selling and horses are changing hands at a record pace. So, you know, it's well worth going to if you've never been to a sale before. Just don't scratch your nose or wave to your friend across the pavilion, because you might be a fine owner.
Take your pen out of your pocket to sign an autograph for a little kid, as the Dwayne Lucas story goes. Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. All right, it is time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment. After that, we're going to get into the guest portion of the program today, and for the next hour and a half or so, it's going to come fast and furious. We're going to be joined after the Legends of the Turf segment by Stuart Fitzgibbon from Castleton Lions. Trainer Mark Cassie is going to be with us at 9 o'clock Eastern. Eric Zimney from Charlestown right around 9:25 Eastern time. And Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs to wrap it all up for you at 9:45 Eastern. So we're going to cover an awful lot of ground, but it is time for your Legends of the Turf, brought to you every single Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. They're on the corner of New Circle and Liberty here in Lexington, Kentucky. And I've told you for more than a decade on this program, if you are in the horse business, they want to be the dealership of the equine industry in central Kentucky. They do it very well. They sponsor the Lexus Raven Run out at Keeneland every single fall. They have a Keeneland shop right there at the Lexus store. And by the way, you can go in and see the godfather, Tony Attiano. You tell him that the Baron sent you in and told you to say hello. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
In early August of 1919, Samuel D. Riddle's big chestnut two-year-old Man of War captured his sixth straight race, and continuing on unbeaten, carried 130 pounds, unheard of, by the way, of current racing practice, to that win in the $10,000 United States Hotel Stakes at Saratoga. The speed and stamina of Big Red had already become legendary, but there were horsemen who had reservations as to his ability to sustain his remarkable speed over a distance of ground. And though self-same doubters felt there would be a real test in his forthcoming scheduled races, the Sanford and the Hopeful, when he would face the very best two-year-olds in training at the time. The son of Fair Play was a veritable giant, standing better than 16 hands and weighing in at nearly 1,100 pounds. He looked more like a four-year-old rather than a two-year-old. Oh, there were challengers to his credentials, all right. Trainer Jimmy Rowe had two in a Wild Air and Upset, although Man of War had whipped Upset in the aforementioned United States Hotel. And then there was Miss Jemima. On Saturday, August 13, 1919, seven horses answered the call to post in the Sanford Memorial. One of the meeting's largest crowds, better than 20,000, were on hand to view the attempt of the great Riddle two-year-old to remain unscathed. John Madden had Captain Alcock in the field, and the most likely contenders were Golden Broom at 2-1, and Upset, who was 7-1. Man of War was the post-time odds-on choice with the betting public at 1-2. Golden Broom was the inside horse, with Frankie Ambrose in the irons, Man of War was in post six with his regular rider Johnny Loftus in the saddle. Golden Broom acted up considerably both in the post parade and at the start, showing both his nervousness and his greenness. But when the flag dropped at the start, Golden Broom was away winging. By the time the field had gone a bare 16th of a mile, Ambrose had the speedy youngster two lengths in front. Upset, Harry Payne Whitney's fine juvenile, who was also away like a rocket, and settled into second place with Donna Connor third. Man of War had gotten away poorly, highly unusual for the Riddle standard bearer, almost being left at the post. By the time Loftus had Big Red settled into stride, he was sixth as the field hit the clubhouse turn. By the time the field swung off the turn into the stretch run, Golden Broom was still winging away clearly in front. Man of War had improved his position to third, cutting down the margin with every stride. It was Golden Brown by a length, Upset by an open two, and Man of War third. The rest of the field had given up the chase in mid-stretch, with Man of War second. Upset had Man of War by a length and a half at the 16th pole, and Loftus dug in on Big Red, asking Nicole for everything he had. 100 feet from the wire, the margin was three parts of a length, but Man of War was running out of real estate. Upset was hanging on tenaciously. As they hit the wire, it was Upset, the number four horse of Harry Payne Whitney, still a neck in front of Man of War, who was gaining slowly. Golden Brown had barely enough left to hang on for third. Captain Alcock finished fourth. The horse appropriately named Upset had indeed lived up to his moniker, and forever from that day on became part of a thoroughbred lore, legend, and mystique as the only horse ever to defeat Man of War. It all happened in the Sanford at Saratoga, August 13, 1919. A great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
What is it about Tony's steaks and seafood that makes it such an incredible dining experience? Well, it could be the steaks. One reviewer said, "This is steak nirvana." Or how about the great seafood, the incredible atmosphere, and service that's unmatched anywhere? All of those things. It's Tony's of Lexington on Main Street, right across from Triangle Park. Come in and become part of Tony's family.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Power.
But Frosted has won with ease in the Whitney.
Passion.
It was Creator and Destin right on the wire, and Iran Ortiz raced.
raised his whip in victory.
Performance.
Pretty City Dancer and Sweet Loretta together in the spinaway.
Gainesway Stallion Tappet, a two-time champion sire and once again number one in 2016, more than $5 million clear on the general sire list. Tappet added to his lofty totals with two new Grade 1 winners in the spinaway at Saratoga as his daughters, Sweet Loretta and Pretty City Dancer, dead-heated for the Grade 1 victory. And Tappet's son, Tapazar, now has a first crop stakes winner as Tip Tap Tapazar closed impressively to take Monmouth's Sapling Stakes. Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner Tapazar retired sound and is represented by eight individual first crop two-year-old winners to date. Tappet and Tapazar standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Summer Revolution on the inside is next, but it's Drapon still running left in him. Long shot, no holding back. Bear has run a good one. Economic Bottle is closing on the outside. Then Summer Revolution and Mind Your Biscuits. Drapon rolls home in the King's Bishop. Economic Bottle, a photo behind them. No Holding Back Bear was there with Summer Revolution and Mind Your Biscuits. The final time was 1 minute 21.25 seconds. An easy opening fraction there, and that made things look good for Drayfong the rest of the way under Mike Smith.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and boy, Drayfong, brilliant in victory in the King's Bishop that afternoon. It was a race you heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry Colmus had the call that afternoon. Jude, here's a son of Castleton Lions stallion Gio Ponti. Now, Gio Ponti made his reputation racing long on the turf. He did it on synthetics. I mean, the horse was unbelievable. He's a multiple champion. You don't expect that he's going to come up at stud with a horse like this, who is a brilliant sprinter, the way Drayfong is, but he has.
He's an amazing horse, but I have to say you heard it here first on the Equine Forum when Stuart Fitzgibbons was on and told everybody,
yeah,
don't worry about this horse being a turf horse. He's going to have plenty of winners on the dirt, and Stuart's always had confidence in him.
No, and he's 100% right. Drayfong, of course, he had Sir Dudley Diggs, who won the Queen's Plate at Woodbine earlier this year. And Stuart Fitzgibbon is with us now. No doubt a big smile on his face as he thinks about all the success Gio Ponti is having at stud. Stuart, welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for praising and talking about the crystal ball that I have here at Castle and Lions that can see into the future and predict everything.
Is that up there in the tower somewhere? Is that where you keep that thing?
It is up there, but I tell you, Jude, it's 118 steps up to that tower, so at my age, I can't go every day and check out that crystal ball, you know?
One of the highlights of anything that we've ever done in 15 years of radio here on HRN, Stuart, is the time that we came out, we hosted a show from the farm, and you had a set up at the very top of that tower.
Well,
it was
unbelievable. I'll never forget that because, I'll say, those steps are very, very hard to do. I remember when I got to the top, I remember Mr. Head bounding up the steps like Drayfong. he was 90 years of age, I believe, or thereabouts at the time. And I got up to the top and I sat down. And you guys looked across at me, and I kind of waved my hands and said, don't talk to me. I'm so out of breath. Don't talk to me. If Mr. Head was bound, we're not a bother on him. But I remember, that was a fun day.
Yeah, it was one of the coolest things I've ever been part of, lugging the equipment up the steps. It was really remarkable. It's something I'm never going to forget. But, you know,
Or do again.
Well said. Well, at that point, Gio Ponti was still on the racetrack, right?
He was, yeah. We were on that great roller coaster ride with him. I mean, you know, we had 5 years with him in training and traveling all around the world and having fun. And, you know, the thing about him is, you know, I know I've said it to you guys before, you've had me on the show a few times, that he always ran a good race. He always ran so well. There was never a day we went home and said, you know what, that was very disappointing. he was such a very, very consistent horse.
What was disappointing was some of the trips that he got. He should have made another couple of million dollars, in my opinion, at least. Yes. He really had some brutal, brutal trips, but what a good horse he was. One of my favorites of all
he
time.
He does. I remember, like, you know, whenever Ramon Dominguez, who rode Giaponte in most of his races, whenever he meets Shane Ryan, you know, who owns Castle and Lions and owns Giaponte, Ramon always kept bringing up, you know, the fact that the race he lost that he should have done better on was the very first Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf at Monmouth. Remember that day with the pouring rain and the turf being very, very heavy?
Yeah, 2007.
And Ramon says to Shane, I'm sorry, I went the wrong way. When they came around the stretch, there was a wall of horses in front of him, and he went towards the rail instead of going towards the outside. And that's the one race, actually, Ramon keeps bringing up, you know, which is unusual in hindsight. That, you know, we found out since that the horse, he liked to hear his hooves rattle, you know. He liked to have faster ground. So, you know, it was no disgrace that particular race at Monmouth.
Well, you know, that was, you're right, that was one. But there were two or three other ones, and my fingers are still wrinkled from standing in the paddock at Monmouth all day. That was about the worst 2 days you could ever have weather-wise, but it's still one of my favorite Breeders' Cups. I think they did a great job, and it was great racing all for
the
2 days. And
it was. I love the track as well. I love the track, the facility, and the people there. They put on a really good show at Monmouth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stuart, by the way, for people that might not have any idea what we're talking about with the tower that's on the farm, if they go to the Castleton Lions website, castletonlions.com, right on the homepage, you're going to see one of the sliders that features a gorgeous picture of that tower that we're telling you about. It actually has Giaponte illuminated from top to bottom on the tower. So go check it out. It's at castletonlions.com. Of course, while you're there, you can read all about Giaponte and Justin Philip and the success that Giaponte is already having and the young babies coming up for Justin Philip and the way that they've been received, which has been tremendous. But let's focus on Giaponte for a minute and that stud career right now, Stuart, because he's not supposed to have horses that come out and run this well sprinting on the dirt. But guess what? He's doing it with all types of runners, and that's a huge compliment to you guys.
It is, you know, and I think if you look at the good sires, I don't think you can actually pigeonhole the really good sires and say, look, they're strictly dirt, strictly turf, strictly short, strictly long. It doesn't happen that way. I think like a good sire will actually get you any type of a horse. And that's what I think Giaponte is doing. I mean, with Trafong, yes, it is an extreme that he's a sprinting dirt horse. Sir Dudley Diggs, on the other hand, looks like he's got plenty of stamina and really appreciates a 10-furlong trip. I know with Trafong, I mean, all for the last 6, 7, 8 months, you know, he's been a horse on our radar that, you know, we were hoping and praying that he would go the right way. And I remember telling people all those months ago, you know, I believe he'll be heading for a race like the King's Bishop. And it's just amazing that actually what I said came true. So we were very, very, very lucky. You know, he's a lovely horse. I remember when he was sold as a foal and as a yearling. We were underbidders on him actually as a foal. Peter Callan and Woods Edge bought him for 200. And then we sold him for 450 to Mr. Chu. So he was, you know, always a very, very nice-looking horse as a young horse. And I think that if the Breeders' Cup Sprint was being run tomorrow, he would actually start close enough to favourite. I hope he makes it there. I think it's a great help to him that it's in Santa Anita, so he only has to go. It's in his backyard, and for a relatively inexperienced horse, I was delighted with how he shipped up to Saratoga and won the King's Bishop. I mean, he won without even being hit by Mike Smith. I mean, he ran like a very, very professional horse. You wouldn't have realized he'd only had a handful of runs before that against opposition that were nowhere near as good as him in those previous races. So yeah. It was very exciting.
Yeah, making a stakes debut in Grade 1 company. Yeah. Did it from a very wide post position too, which, in my opinion, made the effort even more impressive.
Exactly. A very, very professional performance by the horse, I thought. Very, very professional.
Well, Bob had been pointing him to that race pretty much his whole career, so it wasn't surprising to me that the horse ran so well. And I think you have to be delighted that Run Happy's chosen to run in the mile, because that makes the Breeders' Cup Sprint really your race to lose at this point.
Well, you know, I don't want, you know, we were very, very brave all year saying the King's Bishop was the race for him, and I haven't seen the crystal ball. Maybe it'll say that he's going to win the Breeders' Cup Sprint, but I don't want to tempt fate, you know. But, you know, there's always some hot competition on Breeders' Cup Day. It's arguably the best days racing in the world, the best 2 days in the world. It's a fantastic race meet. I mean, all the best horses from everywhere are there. There are some good sprinters around. I mean, oftentimes, especially like you see in Drafong's case, he springs to the fore in August of his three-year-old career. I'm sure there are maybe a few more three-year-olds hovering around there that might get redirected from maybe longer trips towards that race. And then you've got, you know, AP Indian, the older horse who had a really, really good summer for our good friends Green Lantern Stable. He's a very, very good horse. He'd be tough to beat, I think, you know.
Stuart.
But, you know, I think we probably would start favour. But what I would say, I know Run Happy won the sprint last year as a three-year-old. It's oftentimes, it's not really a race for three-year-olds, you know. But I'd be very confident that Drafong would start favourite, and granted normal look and running, he should put up a really good show.
When that crystal ball gives you the winners of the Breeders' Cup races, will you promise to send me a text, please?
Well, I'm not sure if my phone will work from Barbados. maybe I can get the international coverage from there.
We better tell Safi Joseph to watch out at the betting shops.
Exactly.
The Irish are coming. The Irish are coming.
They're already there.
Yeah. So listen, it's great. You know, I mean, I know I've said this to you guys before, but you know, with Giaponte himself, I mean, he was a very, very good three-year-old, and Jude alluded to the fact that he lost a few races even as a three-year-old that perhaps maybe he should have won, granted a bit more luck in running. But he improved so much, and he's running buyers like in the high 90s, 98, 99. Then as a four-year-old, he popped up and started doing consistently in the hundreds, you know, and ran 2.5 in the sheets and that, and a 2.25 as well on the rag. So he improved between the age of 3 and 4 hugely. You know, he became a proper grade one horse as a four-year-old. So I think that there's definitely time does pay off, and sometimes in this business people don't have time and patience with horses, unfortunately. They're very quick to dismiss them, and people are saying now, well, you know, Giaponte's had these few good horses, and they're saying, well, you know, we're not surprised.
Yeah.
You know?
Speaking with Stuart Fitzgibbon of Castleton Lions here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stuart, how about Justin Phillip? Here's a horse that hasn't had runners yet. His first yearlings making their way to the sales ring this year. We talked about the success of the yearling sales and how things have been strong at Keeneland. Justin Phillip, his weanlings last year, extremely well received, and you have to be thrilled with that.
Absolutely. They averaged $50,000 as foals last year. They've sold pretty well this year, 90, 95,000 as yearlings, the first bunch going through. There's about 25, I believe, in the September sale. You know, they're starting to drift in there now in the next few books. He's another quite similar to Giaponte in that he had a very, very long career and retired sound. I mean, he had 32 starts, Justin Phillip. Giaponte had 29. They're completely different horses physically. I mean, the Giaponte is a very elegant kind of turf, you know, a very, very good-looking, attractive type of a turf look of a horse, even though he's proven to get dirt horses too. Whereas Justin Phillip, to me, is just kind of an all-American dirt horse. I mean, he's a big horse from nose to tail, but very, very well balanced, plenty of bone. I mean, he's got a rear end there, wouldn't fit through the door. And his stock, he looks like he's definitely stamping his stock. They look like they're going to be precocious. So I think people, there's a lot of chat about them around the place. I mean, he's very good value. We still have $5,000 this year. It's a very competitive segment of the market. We can't do much more now and hope that they run, but I think they will. And I think they've been very well accepted by the breeders, by the buyers and breeders at this early stage. And the glass is definitely very much 3/4 full.
Well, he brings a lot to the table. First of all, his speed, and second of all, his consistency. And then you add his looks in there, and he's really the complete package at a stud fee that's below probably what it should be.
Yeah, I tell you about him too. If you ever come out and see him, he's the most unbelievable, quiet, laid-back horse. You expect when you see a sprinter that they're going to be like a coiled spring and full of nervous energy. He's not. You could bring him out with one finger on the shank. He is just a very, very happy, contented, quiet type of horse. I'm not surprised he raced for so long. that he was able to, you know, stay in training and run in so many races. I mean, he was running every few weeks at one stage there because he loved his racing, and he was a very, very obliging racehorse to the training methods, to the jockey, and he was just a very, very honest, consistent racehorse.
I like horses that are kind of mellow like that. Yeah. Can I get a leg up and take him for a spin before I breed a horse to him?
Maybe he can go up the steps of the tower. I tell you, he wouldn't fit through the door. You know that door is pretty narrow. He definitely wouldn't fit through that. I'm sure you would, all right.
I don't know. You haven't seen me in a while, Stuart.
Saratoga takes its toll.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Stuart Fitzgibbon, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the official apparel of the horse racing lifestyle and the official apparel of horse racing. You can visit embracetherace.com to learn more. Stuart, appreciate it, my friend. Thanks for all the support of us here on the network and continued success with both Gio Ponti and with Justin Phillip.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, guys.
All right, Stuart Fitzgibbon here on HRRN. And, yeah, I mean, I look at Gio Ponti. He was one of my favorite racehorses, right? And I think you
Mine
fell
too.
In love with him,
yeah.
too, right?
Yeah.
And then to see him have this kind of success at stud is just, it's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I always think of Stewart when one wins on the dirt. I go, how did he know that? You know,
yeah.
But
the crystal ball at the top of the tower.
that's the key right there. I'll take the 118 steps if it's going to give me all the Breeders' Cup
winners. That picture on their website is spectacular. It's castletonlions.com. Go check it out because it really is a gorgeous picture of that tower and what we're talking about here on the show this morning. We'll get to another break. We're going to come back with more. We'll get you set for a very, very busy second half of the program. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 33 Grade 1 winners, including 7 Breeders' Cup winners, 5 Horses of the Year, and a Kentucky Derby winner. Millridge raised foals of 2014 include Oscar Performance and Grade 3 Sanford winner Bitumen. Millridge is offering an outstanding group of yearlings at this year's Keeneland September sale, with 24 yearlings in books 1 and 2, over 90% of those raised or foaled on the farm. Millridge welcomes you to inspect these exciting racing prospects in which you can dream of participating on the biggest stage.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan?
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Amalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Bred for greatness and a brilliant Grade 1 winner on the track, Airdrie Studs Creative Cause is giving every indication that his may be a very special future at stud. Already represented by the undefeated and dominant Landalucy Stakes winner, the one we waited for, Creative Cause currently sits second on the first crop sire list, and with impressive maiden special weight winners throughout the nation, appears poised to lead this banner stallion crop in 2016 and beyond. Airdrie Studs Creative Cause. Think about it.
A two-year-old debut winner.
Danza and Permanent Campaign streaking under the line together, and Danza wins by a hard-fought half length.
A Grade 1 winning and classic place three-year-old.
Danza, in a sparkling performance, is making short work of the Arkansas Derby field. Danza is the boss as he wins by 5.
Danza, new for 2016 at Spendthrift Farm. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Make sure your horses shine at the sales with the highest quality hay and straw from Washington Hay Company. At Washington Hay Company, you'll find beautiful bright straw, top quality Timothy hay, and their soft leafy alfalfa, all from Washington State.
and their unparalleled personal service ensures they'll be by your side every step of the way at your most important time of the year. So let Washington Hay worry about the hay, straw, and shavings while you present your horse. Contact Brad Green today and be sure to visit Washington Hay Company on Facebook.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
As the whole field concertina is now entering the last quarter mile, Cody Bear is the first to commit as Barton weakens. Tepin and Ballado have produced. Far side is Amazing Maria. On down towards the last furlong. Lightning Spear, Tormor and Avadia behind these, but it's Tepin in front. Being chased by Ballado. These two dominate the finish of the Queen Anne. Tepin, Ballado raising an effort near the line. Tepin pushed out though. Wins for America and lands the Queen Anne. Ballado is second. Lightning Spear third. Tormor fourth, and they're followed by Avadia and Amazing Maria.
That's the Queen of the Turf, Champion Tepin, winning the Queen Anne Stakes at Royal Ascot in her most recent outing. She's back in action later today against the boys once again in the Grade 1 Rico Woodbine Mile, and that race comes up as race number 12, the final race on the program tonight. Post time set for 6:39 Eastern Time, and Mark Cassie's going to join us right around 9 o'clock Eastern Time. He's going to talk about Tepin. He'll talk about World Approval, who goes in the Grade 1 Northern Dancer at Woodbine. He'll talk about Zero Hour, who he has in the Grade 3 Ontario Derby, and then some of his other contenders across the country as well, including big races at Churchill Downs with Thirst for Life in the Grade 3 Iroquois and Dream Dancing in the Grade 2 Pocahontas. So a lot of things happening for Mark Cassie. We're also going to hear from Eric Zimney from Charlestown in the second half of the show as he talks about the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks, which comes up tonight. You'll hear it exclusively beginning 9 o'clock Eastern Time here on the network. And we'll wrap it up with Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs to talk about that big weekend at Churchill later this afternoon and, of course, the big races tomorrow, too. Zimney asked me when he heard that Mark Cassie was coming on and he was going to do the interview right before him. He said, so I assume you're having him on to talk about his horse in the Wild and Wonderful Stakes at Charlestown tonight.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll lead with that one, Mark. So Tepin will take a back seat to Grand Shores in the Wild and Wonderful.
Yeah, well, you know, priorities. We're covering that race.
So. Yeah, first things first, Mark. We'll get to Tepin in a minute when we get there. Looking forward to Tepin, though. I mean, how do you not look forward to her and everything? You know, there are certain stars in the sport today, and forget about saying that racing's dead, because we see it all the time when we go to racetracks for big days that people turn out. If you put a good product out there, people love this game. And there are certain stars like Tepin, like Beholder, like California Chrome, that when they run, Songbird even, when they run, people stop. And people want to watch the race. They want to listen to it on the radio. They want to be part of it. And they want to see these events live.
No, absolutely. I don't know him. I don't know anybody that says racing's dead. I think that's an old thing. We need to put that to rest.
I mean, still hear it from time to time.
You do?
Yeah, racing has problems.
Racing has problems.
Well, it's not dead. You can't get anybody to work together on the same page. That's why. I mean, yeah. I've always said, forget about a commissioner. You need a psychiatrist to run racing, because you need to be able to work with so many different entities, and those entities are different from state to state.
Right.
You have to be a psychiatrist to bring everybody together.
Yeah. No, they have the fences to keep the people in. That's
right.
That's why there's fences on the backside to keep everybody in.
Not to keep them out.
Not to keep people out.
As you would think sometimes when you see these long lines outside the gates waiting to get in. But I never minded that. Like, people would say, how do you not let people in? Why do you make them stand outside for a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour at Saratoga before the gates open? It's like that with any venue. You can't get into Heinz Field before the Steeler game until they open the gates. There's a certain time that the gates are open. Right. People line up outside. Same thing with Yankee Stadium. Same thing with Wrigley Field.
Well, and I don't think people realize how much security plays a part these days in sporting events, and especially racing. You know, security costs a lot of money. And it's important these days, so that's part of it.
It is.
Okay.
I concur.
We're all on the same page.
I do concur. Hey, so guess what?
What?
So no race broadcast other than the Charlestown Oaks coming up tonight on the network, right?
Right.
So then we segue into the road to the Breeders' Cup coming up because you and I are going to be at Santa Anita on October 1st.
Right.
Looking forward to that coverage. Big A, Anthony Stabile will be back in New York to bring you coverage that very same day of the Breeders' Cup Challenge races at Belmont. So we'll kind of tag team it, both coasts, bring you all the action from Santa Anita and from Belmont on October 1st. Then we come back here. We're right into Keeneland, Fall Stars weekend, 7, 8, and 9. We have the QE2 on the 15th, the Lexus Raven Run on the 22nd. Then we head on out westward to Santa Anita for all of that coverage Breeders' Cup week, which is going to be just a lot of fun, as always.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a busy time, but a lot of good racing, lots and lots of good racing. Really looking forward to the October 1st preview day, as I like to call it.
Our entire schedule available on our website, horseracingradio.net. Go check it out. See where we're going to be in the coming weeks and months as we head down that road to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Quick update on our poll question this morning. We asked you, with the road to the Kentucky Derby officially starting today with the Iroquois, the first points race for the Kentucky Derby series, are you more excited about the road to the Kentucky Derby this weekend or the road to the Breeders' Cup, which, as we know, is already in full swing? So far, the road to the Breeders' Cup is dominating this poll. 73% of the folks weighing in saying, yeah, we like the road to the Breeders' Cup. We're excited about that this weekend. 27% in favor of the road to the Kentucky Derby getting started.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's about right.
Derby's a long ways away.
Yeah. Oh, I can give you the countdown.
Oh. Please don't.
Wait, I'll do it next. Just a reminder that tonight, this afternoon, the Woodbine Mile comes up, and we told you it is 6:39 Eastern. You can watch and wager on that $1 million race. This year's Woodbine Mile marks the 35th running of the mile, which will again feature a star-stacked international field, including champion Teppan, the queen of the turf. Make sure you tune in to that one and check it out. Again, 6:39 Eastern is the post. The mile is part of the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series, with the winner qualifying for the Breeders' Cup Mile in November. And Woodbine will have large guarantees as well as 20-cent bet minimums on all Triactor, Superfecta, Pick 3, and Pick 4 pools this afternoon. It's the Rico Woodbine Mile later today. 6:39 Eastern, first post 1 p.m. For more information, visit woodbineracetrack.com. We'll get to a break. We'll come back. Mark Cassie kicks off hour number two right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
California Chrome Dortmund head for the wire in an absolute thriller. California Chrome's class has pulled him through.
Joel Rosario's not even asking to go at all. He's in front by 2.5 lengths. And then comes F&X on the outside. A late bid from Comfort Delta with the rail and upstart. But Frosted has won with ease in the Whitney.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Amis Gizmo in front, but here comes Sir Dudley Diggs and Julien Le Barou. Sir Dudley Diggs has hit the front, and Sir Dudley Diggs from Amis Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Mike Smith just shakes the reins at Songbird. Going for Broke has made progress up into second inside a family tree, but there's 6 lengths behind Songbird at the 16th pole. It is Songbird, this magnificent filly, winning the Alabama. She is a perfect 10.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Baron and Pontiff in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And looking forward to a busy second half of the program featuring trainer Mark Cassie, who comes your way in just a couple of moments. Eric Zimney from Charlestown and Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs all ahead. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out that really fun interview that we had with Stuart Fitzgibbon a short time ago. Of course, Stuart talking about Gio Ponti and Justin Phillip at Castleton Lions. Some great stuff in that interview. You can check it out, as well as the full show, each and every week that we are on the air. That podcast at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Well, we told you in the first half of the program that Teppan is the star of the show today because she is the big name. She's the queen of the turf. She's the one facing the boys yet again in the Grade 1 Rico Woodbine Mile. And looking forward to that effort. She is trained, of course, by trainer Mark Cassie, who has either the morning line favorite or the horse that's among the top two or three choices on the morning line in greatest stakes races at Woodbine, at Churchill Downs, all over the country. And Mark really holding a strong hand today, and he joins us now here on the Equine Forum. Mark, appreciate the time, my friend.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at some of the horses that you're running today. Teppan, massive favorite, world approval, favored in the Northern Dancer. You have Zero Hour in the Grade 3 Ontario Derby. And then the races at Churchill, you're holding a strong hand there in the Iroquois and the Pocahontas, respectively. What's the secret, man?
A lot of good owners that give us good horses. So it's going to be an interesting weekend. Hopefully it's a good one. Tomorrow we're excited. We have the Natalma and the Summer Stakes as well. So, it's exciting, but also nerve-wracking.
Eric Zimney is going to join us next from Charlestown to talk about the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks. And the minute he heard that you were coming on the program before him, he said, I assume you're having him on to talk about Grand Shores and the Wild and Wonderful Stakes. So let's start there.
I figured that's what it was about. I like that. Yeah, he's a nice horse, you know, a hard-knocking horse, and he's trained very well. We think he'll run well.
Yeah, he hasn't won a race in a while, but he seems to be coming around. That's a little bit of a drop in class from some of the tough horses he's been running lately. It's a good spot for him, and the 7/8 should hit him right in the head.
Yeah, well, 7/8 is that's right in his wheelhouse. It is.
All right, Mark, let's talk about Teppan here for a minute because, I mean, here she is, queen of the turf. She's a champion. She comes off of that huge win at Royal Ascot. Let's start by looking back on that performance. How good was she that afternoon?
I mean, it really still just amazes me. It was just incredible. Because I don't really know that. I think she was good. Was she at her very best? I don't know. I thought she struggled a little bit with the turf and everything, but. That just shows you. I've always said good horses win when everything goes their way. Great horses can win when everything's against them, and she's a great horse.
Well, she was targeting, at least there was a race at Saratoga that was on the radar for Teppan. Didn't make that race. She goes again in the Woodbine Mile later today. Talk about the past several weeks, and what have they been like for Teppan since that win at Royal Ascot?
She's once the weather started cooling off, Mike, she becomes a different horse, and she's trained extremely well the last few weeks. It's funny, my wife was showing me a video last night of somebody videoed her getting off the van at Woodbine, and she walks out, gets off, walks about four or five steps, looks around, and like, where am I now? Where have these people sent me?
Yeah.
She loves it, though. She loves it.
Yeah, she very rarely wakes up in her own bed, huh?
No, she doesn't. But she likes that. We were telling everybody, I think she traveled better to England than we did. The funny part about her is when she gets to a new place, she trains extremely well. I think she gets bored after a while, so we have to keep her on the move.
Mark, we were talking about this earlier in the program as we were discussing the past several weeks for Teppan and the situation at Saratoga, and I don't even know if situation is really not the right word, but there was a time period where you decided, okay, we're going to let her just be Teppan for a little bit, and we're going to kind of ease back on her and point for this race at Woodbine. What was going on there? Jude kind of mentioned that maybe she just got to Saratoga and said, hey, you know what? This isn't really my scene. What was going on there with Teppan?
Well, I think it was a combination of a few things. One, when we went to Royal Ascot, when we went to Ascot and came back, we had a plan to try to really the mile, possibly the possibly. I think I can't think of the filly race, right? Yeah, the filly race. No, but anyways, the Four Star Dave ended up being kind of an afterthought, and we weren't planning on that. And I think maybe we rushed her back a little too quick, or I did, and she just said, you know what? And then it was hot, and she just said, no, I'm not ready to do this. So we said, okay.
It was hot during Saratoga and very, very muggy. It was especially
the early part of it. It was, you know, she had some days and it was hot, and she wasn't happy about it. And so we said, okay. And Mr. Masterson has always said this from the beginning too. If we're not 100% happy, she owes us nothing. We don't have to run her ever again. But she likes it, and she's trained very well for this.
Tell people a little bit about Robert Masterson, because you know people may not be familiar with him and everything that he's meant certainly to you and to your career. But talk about Robert and his involvement in racing here.
Oh, he's been in it for years and years. I think over 30 years. He's a friend and partner with Robert Hubbard. And for us, it all started. I had a filly called Exclusive Love, and she was for sale. And Robert bought her and left her with us. And I think we finished second in the Lake George with her at Saratoga at 50-1. And he doesn't have a lot of horses. He'll buy three or four fillies every year. And you know, normally we get to train them, and that's how we got Teppan.
Have you ever had a horse that somebody named their kid after?
Not that I know of.
Oh. But Molly Jo Rosa named her daughter Teppan.
I heard that there is a little girl named Teppan. I don't think it's that bad a name.
No, I think it's pretty cool, actually. But it doesn't happen every day.
No, I mean, it could have been worse. You know,
could have been A-Rod.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, talk specifically about the Woodbine Mile today. She's going to square off with seven rivals, doesn't have to face the defending champ Monde Elise, who was originally pointing for this spot, but still a solid group that she'll have to tackle today. Size up the competition.
You know, it's not an easy race. The other thing is, and I, you know, obviously we know a little bit about something about Woodbine, and Woodbine definitely has a home field advantage for those horses that have been running there. And if I said that didn't concern me, I'd be lying. There's a lot of good horses that go to Woodbine and don't come with their A game. But my feeling is if she was able to overcome, you know, the straight mile at Ascot, that the 3/8 of a mile at Woodbine down the stretch shouldn't be a problem. If she runs true to form, she'll shut off until Julian asks her to run, and that shouldn't be an issue. But there's a lot of nice horses in the race. It's no walkover. I mean, I know they have her 1-2, and I think those odds probably reflect her how popular she is more than how much she lays over the field, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, that makes total sense, because it is a tough race. It's a lot tougher than it maybe looks on paper, but she is such a fan favorite, and understandably so, that I think the morning line's probably accurate, but it's not going to be an easy race.
There'll be people bet on her because she's Teppan, but no way, shape, or form does she lay over the field. Not like a 1-2 shot normally does.
What's it like for a trainer to look up and see their horse at 1-2 in a grade one race on the morning line? What's that like, Mark?
Well, it doesn't happen very often. so I really don't know. I mean, you know, anything big she does. People say, are you nervous? I said, I'm nervous when she gallops. I'm nervous when she freezes. I'm nervous when she's standing in her stall. So, I'm nervous.
So on Mark Cassie-like, really.
Will you get nervous when she goes into the gate this afternoon?
Yeah, a little bit, for sure. Yeah, some of it's just getting there. It's like, you know, so I don't, as I've said before, we don't want to let her down. And, you know, of course, Woodbine and Toronto and Canada has become a second home for us. So to be able to bring her there for everybody to see, you know, it means a lot to us. And they were saying at the barn, David Adams, my longtime assistant there at Woodbine, he said, we've never had anything like this before, you know, with the media and, you know, just the excitement about around her. And I think it's great. It's great for Woodbine. And, it's very nice of Mr. Masterson. As I said many times at the beginning of the year, when we decided to run her another year, he said, you know, I don't want to do just the same thing we did last year. He said he talked about Ascot, and then he also talked about Woodbine. He wanted to bring her and run her at Woodbine because he loves, you know, he wanted to show her off to the world.
Well, you can learn more about the Rico Woodbine Mile and that outstanding program at Woodbine today by going to woodbineentertainment.com/due north. That's woodbineentertainment.com/due north. Mark, how about the Northern Dancer? You send out World Approval, who, like Teppan, makes his Woodbine debut, and a horse that last time out went favored in the Arlington Million, finished seventh, but was only beaten about a length and three quarters that day.
You know, I've said all along that I think World Approval is as good as probably anybody in North America on the turf, with the exception. I mean, I don't know if I want to mess with Flintshire, but I was disappointed. I thought his last race was flat. He or right, he only got beat a length and a half, so it's a little hard to be disappointed, but. You know, I don't really have a good answer for why he was flat. We did run him back kind of quickly when he won the United Nations, and maybe that took a little more out of him. The nice part, and it was very warm. It was very warm at Arlington that day. He's going to get some cooler weather today, and he's trained. I would say he's maybe even trained a little better into this race than he did the Arlington Million.
Well, in case you're wondering, we are only 231 days, 9 hours, 17 minutes, and 27 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, which will be May 6th, 2017. And
I was thinking that same thing.
Yeah, I kind of figured you had that one in your head because you send out Thirst for Life in the Iroquois later today. Tell me about Thirst for Life and that particular race later today.
We think he's an up-and-coming star. Obviously, he's got a great pedigree. He's a half to the great Cavorti. I think he's going to run really well. This is what we've been waiting and wanting to run him two turns. I think it's not an easy race, but I think it might set up well for him. And we just want him to run well to set him up. So maybe one more two-turn race, and if he shows he's good enough, we'd love to have him in California later on in the year.
Well, he broke his mane very impressively at Churchill, and then the Best Pal was a pretty solid race. The winner came back to win the Futurity.
His Best Pal race was better than it looked. They went the first quarter very slow, and he was kind of on the bit and wanting to run off, which – I was surprised because he usually relax a little bit, but I think it was because the pace was so slow. How often do you see a 23 quarter at Del Mar?
Yeah, very rarely.
Of course, they sprinted home, and he had no shot of running them down. So And as turns out, obviously, Bob's horse is a very good horse. So that race is probably a little stronger than it looks. And like I said, we've been waiting to run him two turns. So I'm not – does he have to win? I think he's still learning. He doesn't have to win today, but I'd be pretty disappointed if he doesn't run well.
Mark Cassie with us here on HRRN. Mark, only about a minute or so left here before we have to get to the commercial break, but I do want to ask you about Dream Dancing, who goes in the Pocahontas, comes out of that, what I would call a very professional maiden victory at Saratoga. Tell me about her.
She's funny, Mike. I read an article, Mike Watchmaker was talking about the Pocahontas, and he said he was going to stay away from Dream Dancing because she had turf all on the bottom side, and I was a little shocked when I read that because her mom's by Monarcos, who did pretty good on the dirt. Her second dam is Beautiful Pleasure, who won 6 grade ones on the dirt. So I was a little confused. This is a filly this is a filly that we ran. You'll see us do this a lot of times. We'll run horses on the grass simply to be able, one, I think it's much kinder on them when they're first starting out. And plus, we wanted to get a couple two-turn races into her, and obviously you can't get two-turn races at Saratoga on the dirt. This is a filly that actually is trained better on the dirt than she has on the grass. So the grass was just to get some experience into her. We feel pretty good. We think she's going to have a big shot today on the dirt.
I absolutely love her, and you know, Monarcos, that's a, well, I mean, to me, this filly's pedigree screams dirt, and then you see the minute and two-fifths best of the morning breeze at Saratoga. She obviously trains good on the dirt. I mean, and it's exactly what I said yesterday on our handicapping preview show, that you know, she probably was running on the grass to get the distance races at Saratoga. I mean, I just think she's an international good thing.
You know, that's exactly that's the way we do things. And that's what I told Mr. Oxley. I said, look, this filly's okay on the grass. We believe she's better on the dirt. But I said, I want to get a couple races into her. And that's what happened.
Now, Mark Cassie, very busy day for him coming up, not just at Churchill Downs, but certainly Woodbine, too, with Champion Teppan and World Approval, a couple of others running there, and, of course, the big races tomorrow, too. Mark, really appreciate the time. As always, like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the official apparel of horse racing, and you can do that by visiting EmbraceTheRace.com. We'll get your gift to you, but everybody else can check out EmbraceTheRace.com. Appreciate it, my friend.
Well,
good luck today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And when are we going to have another draw for a Cadillac? I still haven't won the last.
I put you in for the trip to Barbados at Saratoga. We didn't win that either.
I'm on there.
Yeah. I'm trying, man.
You guys have a good day.
Good
have
luck.
A good day.
Yeah. By the way, it was a Lexus, Mark, not a Cadillac. It was a draw for a Lexus. Killing me.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Mark Cassie. How much fun is he, though?
Yeah. It's surprising to hear him say that he gets nervous. Because he always seems like he's just the most relaxed guy in the room.
If you don't have butterflies, then you're not ready.
What is that, a Pittsburgh Steeler
quote
or something?
No, I remember Robbie Alvarado saying that to me a long time ago. He says, the butterflies before a big race are good. And here's a guy that's ridden in a million of them. And he said, the butterflies are good because it means you're ready.
Well, that's good, I guess.
One approach.
He's ready.
All right, well, we're ready for Eric Zimney from Charlestown. He comes up next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti, the 7-time Grade 1 winner and earner of more than $6 million, is now a classic-producing sire with his first crop.
Sir Dudley Diggs and Julien Le Barou. Sir Dudley Diggs has hit the front, and Sir Dudley Diggs from Amis Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
In addition to Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs, Gio Ponti is also represented by exciting Grade 1 winner Dre Fong.
Closing on the outside, then Summer Revolution and Mind Your Biscuits. Dre Fong rolls home
Hartman, the King's Bishop.
And Castleton Lion Stallion Justin Phillip retired sound after competing in 23 graded stakes, winning 11 of those, including this dominating performance in the Grade 1 A.G. Vanderbilt at Saratoga.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by two.
Justin Phillips' first yearlings enter the sales ring this year. For more information, visit CastletonLions.com.
Wonder what it feels like to be an owner inside the paddock before your horse races, but don't know how to get started? Contact West Point Thoroughbreds to get inside the game. You can play in a big way right away by owning pieces of multiple horses, which can increase your chances of action. West Point Thoroughbreds has been professionally managing racing partnerships for 20 years. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtv.com. That's westpointtv.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee is one of the newest additions to the Claiborne Farm roster. The Don Handicap winner traveled around the world and back competing against the best of his generation. He earned multiple 100-plus buyer speed figures on both dirt and turf with strong finishes in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, Stephen Foster, Dubai World Cup, and Woodbine Mile. Retiring to stud with more than $2.3 million in lifetime earnings. Lee at Claiborne Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And Deodora is going to win the Arlington Washington Lassie in grand style.
Deodora remained undefeated with a dominating 5.5 length win in last weekend's Arlington Washington Lassie Stakes at Arlington Park. The daughter of Darley stallion Hard Spun joins Watch Your Own Bobber as major stakes winners for Hard Spun last weekend. Watch Your Own Bobber posted a career best 103 buyer with a 4.5 length win in the More Than Ready Stakes at Kentucky Downs. Deodora and Watch Your Own Barber are your Darley Taking the Reins Performers of the Week. Darley Stallion Hard Spun is Danzig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more first crop stakes winners than any other stallion. Hard Spun's 9 lifetime Grade 1 winners include Eclipse Champion Questing and Arlington Million winner Hardest Core, along with Hard Not to Like, Hard Aces, and Smooth Roller. Learn more about Hard Spun and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
With a quarter of a mile left to go, is 6-1, 12 and 3/5 of a second. Sophia's Song and Victor Carrasco just took a peek there, left and now right-handed. Is Sophia's Song in front with a 4-length lead. Great Soul second. Then Disco Rose to the outside in the Navy now, like well behind early, has now moved into third. A 16th to go, and Sophia's Song ridden out and rolling home in the Caesar's Wish. From Great Soul in the Navy now, followed by Disco Rose.
Dave Rodman with the call of that Caesar's Wish Stakes. That was at Laurel back on March 12th, Sophia's Song, an easy winner that afternoon. She's looking for much of the same later today when she goes postward in the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks. That is a race that is part of an 8 stakes race program, part of the Race for the Ribbon program, and features a field of 6, and it promises to be a very, very good evening at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. You're going to hear that coverage beginning 9 o'clock Eastern time here on the network. Anthony Stabile, Ellis Starr going to have the coverage 9 Eastern exclusively worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penajude Feld, Baron and Pontiff, back with you here on the Equine Forum and getting ready to welcome in our good friend Eric Zimney, who is the Vice President of Racing Operations at Charlestown, the man in large part responsible for putting this program together tonight. And Eric, first of all, welcome for the time, and you have to be thrilled, really thrilled with the way this whole program came together.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Yeah, it came together pretty well. You know, we are a little light on numbers in some of the stakes, but you know, it's kind of a symptom of the rest of the country right now. I mean, we're certainly not alone in that, but Sophia Song certainly looks like she's going to be a pretty strong favorite in the Oaks tonight. And, you know, horses like Rise Up will be there. And, you know, very good program. It's going to be a good crowd here tonight. And we're hopefully going to raise some good money for a great cause, too.
Did you run the 5K?
I didn't run the 5K. You might hear they're in the background finishing up now. But my college roommate actually won his age group, but I will get some not bragging rights, but I can bust him because he got out finished by a 12-year-old girl who finished fifth in the whole thing. So there's about 150 people here for it. There's not 151. I am on the sidelines.
Yeah, you're on the vets list. I know that.
Permanent vets list.
Well, tell me about the Oaks, because I mentioned just a field of six, but you attract horses like Sophia's Song, which is never a bad thing when you get Todd Pletcher and Javier Castellano there for one of your signature races. Tell me about that field and the way everything came together.
Yeah, you know, of course, the Prioress in New York was 2 weeks before our race. It hasn't always been that way. That started maybe 2 years ago, and it goes without saying that certainly didn't help us much. But there's some horses at the last minute that we thought we were going to get, and they didn't. But to get a horse like Sophia Song, you know, that's, like I said, going to be a strong favorite. I think I was looking at the third draft sheets, and she ran a one in her last start, which for a three-year-old filly coming off a layoff, that's a pretty serious number. So behind her, I mean, you have horses like Kitty Up and Quick Release who have run pretty well, who've run in some you know, some decent spots, but they all might be battling for second. But that doesn't make it any less of a betting opportunity. I mean, you know, if you're betting some exotics in that race, you still got to figure out who's finishing second, third, and fourth, and that seems to me on paper like a crapshoot.
Yeah, it's an interesting race. I made Covey Trace the my second choice, and she's coming off a five-length win at Ellis Park. I don't know how that translates to Sophia's Song, probably five lengths behind, but she got a big number in the race, and, you know, she looks pretty salty, too. They both have the outside two post positions, which I don't think is going to hurt them at all.
No, I don't either. I mean, you know, it'll be interesting the tack that Javier takes, because his horse, his filly, has some speed. For sure. And, you know, does he use her a little bit more to, because it's a 2-turn, 7-furlong race, does he use her a little bit more to get the lead? Or does he just think he's on the best horse, concede ground loss, and try to win it that way? That'll be interesting to see. And, yeah, Covey Trace, she'll actually get the services of Arnaldo Bocachica, who right now is our leading rider here and knows the track very well, which can always be an advantage when those horses ship in here for our big days.
Eric, we put Teppan on the back burner with Mark Cassie a little while ago when he joined us, and we started the interview by asking him about Grand Shores, who goes in the Wild and Wonderful. That's one of the eight stakes races on the program. It's race number 9, a post time of 9:10. So that's the first race that we're going to have on the coverage later tonight. And, you know, you look at betting opportunities. You have a horse like Rise Up in there, who's 6-5 on the morning line. Who else? Javier Castellano aboard. But you look at all of the stakes races that you put together tonight, and I think there are going to be some really good opportunities to make some money if you can find the right horses.
Yeah, I agree. I don't Rise Up's going to be tough in there, but far from a lock. I mean, the horse on the far outside of that race looks tough. Yeah, Grand Shores, I mean, was right behind Emshawish and Valid earlier this year, I think. So certainly has some backlash there. I can't believe, I'm stunned personally, that the Cassies are up in Woodbine and not here with Grand Shores. You know, I don't know. Do they have anyone up at Woodbine today?
it's a little bit inexcusable. We'll take that up with Mark next time we talk with him, though.
Yeah, nuts. But, yeah, that's there are. I mean, the pick four sequence, even though, you know, the fields might be a little bit shorter, you know, other than Sophia's Song, I didn't see any singleable horses in there. So it doesn't mean you're not going to have to spend a little bit of money to come up with a ticket that that could, you know, pay a fair amount. Maybe not what you're used to, but, you know, still an opportunity for sure.
You know, we get a chance to come up there every year for the Charlestown Classic, that Grade 2 race, which takes place about the, what, third week of April every single year, Eric, and it's one of our favorite trips of the year. What does a day like today, tonight's card with the Race for the Ribbon program, what does that mean to Hollywood Casino? And what does it mean to that entire area there in West Virginia?
It means a lot. I mean, for our fans, like we always talk about, they don't get to see some of the stars of the sport up close necessarily. I mean, I'm not saying other tracks take it for granted, but, you know, when a guy like Javier Castellano is here at our track, you know, I remember after he won with Caixa Electronica, people, like, you know, you would have thought he was a member of the Beatles with the way people were like swarming around him when he was going back to the jocks room. And for our fans to get to see horses like that, jocks like that, for us to be on the on the front of the forum and on shows like yours. It's a big deal for us. It's great exposure, and it goes to show you, we can compete with the big boys a little bit, if not just a couple days a year, which is always a good thing. So it means a ton, Mike.
And the fans really respond to that too. I mean, I'm sure Javier will be hounded for autographs and stuff. You've had other celebrities there like Joe Torre. And it's great for the fans to be able to see these people that usually they only get to watch on television.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised you didn't add Larry Colmus to the list of celebrities that had made appearances here in the last few years. But
best movie ever made, by the way, going with Paul Espinoza over Larry Colmus for the calls up there, by the way. Congratulations.
Complete no-brainer. the people who supply the wine to our restaurants were a little upset about it.
There's an uprising?
There was an uprising. Missing budget. It was a disaster for them. But no, Paul did a great job tonight. But, yeah, I remember Joe Torre, he's letting kids try on his World Series rings and stuff like that, and stuff we're just not used to here.
Eric, how about the state of West Virginia racing? Because we don't often get the opportunity to talk about it here on this program. And, the racing that you conduct there at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown, we mentioned the Charlestown Classic. We see the program here tonight, Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks. A lot of these races, especially the Classic, don't have to take a back seat to anybody in terms of the caliber of competition that you attract and what those horses do throughout the remainder of the year and throughout the remainder of their careers. So how about the state of racing in West Virginia? Where does it sit now?
Well, like I said, and I was talking about the fields for the stakes tonight at the outset. I mean, on a day-to-day basis, there is a horse shortage. Of course there is right now. And the challenge here for the state of racing in West Virginia is going to be to harmonize supply and demand of race days and horses, because, at the end of the day, we're a product and distribution, an entertainment game. And if you don't have the products, we can talk about marketing all we want, but if you don't have the product, you're really fighting an uphill battle. And, we got to give the customer what they want, which may mean running fewer race days or do something in order to get the field size up here, because, you really risk losing customers in the long term when you don't give them what they want. And right now, with the state of the fields the way they are, with the horse shortage the way it is, it's pretty tough. So that's definitely something that's got to be looked at.
Will it help if I come up and go to the craps table for a little bit?
Yeah, we might wind up running 240 days next year.
Purses will be way up, I can tell you that much.
Way up. The Classic may be $3 million next year or something like that. So it's appreciated either way. Hey, our horsemen would love you.
Well, I have to tell you before I let you go, my beautiful wife, Michelle, has put in a request for gluten-free dip for her chips in Pittsburgh this weekend. So see what you can do.
I'm sorry, man. I put you in a tough spot by making that, huh?
Well, it had avocado in it, so I tried it, but I wasn't touching it.
Okay. Yeah, wise move. And like I said, me and Vontaze Burfict will have something in common tomorrow. Neither of us will be working, so hopefully we can pull it off.
Well said. How about a prediction for the game? You got a final score?
I'm going 31-21. Good, guys.
All right, there you go. Eric Zimney from Hollywood Casino at Charlestown, also a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan like myself. So, Eric, appreciate it, my friend. Good luck with that program tonight. Enjoy the Charlestown Oaks, and well done, my friend. Keep it rolling.
Great, man. Thanks, and thanks again for all your guys' support. You guys have been great.
Absolutely. Eric Zimney, of course, that coverage 9 o'clock Eastern time. Make sure you tune in worldwide at horseracingradio.net. And, by the way, just because it is an internet-only broadcast and not airing on Sirius XM doesn't mean you can't listen to it when you're driving in your car, because all you have to do is Bluetooth it in your car and you can listen to all that coverage 9 to 10:30 Eastern. Post time for the Charlestown Oaks is set for 10:18 Eastern, so make sure you're locked into that coverage later tonight.
Yeah, and you don't even need a Bluetooth. You can listen to it right on your phone if you want to.
Yeah, so, that's true, too. Yeah, easy.
Not a problem. Go to the website, hit the Listen Now button.
Yep. Don't hit Escuchar in Vivo.
No.
Because that's not going to give you anything tonight. The Charlestown Oaks, not available in Spanish, but the Breeders' Cup will be. Both days of the Breeders' Cup World Championships available in both English and Spanish. You can tune into the all-new HRRN en Español. If you're not already following HRRN en Español on Twitter, make sure you do it now, and they'll keep you up to date on everything happening on the Spanish side of things as we make our way down the road to the Breeders' Cup and then bring you that coverage at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Should be good.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it. We're going to get to another break. We'll come back and get you set for that Road to the Breeders' Cup presented by Gainsway. We'll be joined by Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs in just a little bit. We'll do that next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich Shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 and 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I've thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
Ed's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Join us at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races on Saturday, September 17th for the 8th annual Race for the Ribbon program. Combining the excitement of high-stakes racing with raising money for the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure West Virginia affiliate. The night features 13 races, including 8 stakes and nearly $1 million in purse money, highlighted by the Grade 3 $350,000 Charlestown Oaks. Racing kicks off with a special first post of 5 p.m. Eastern. That's the Race for the Ribbon program and the $350,000 Charlestown Oaks coming up on Saturday, September 17th.
Ramsey Farms Kitten's Joy.
They're racing up to the wire to visit there with a nose down in front to win it.
It is going to be Camelot Kitten. Camelot Kitten did it.
But the Christmas pass to Sharp Kitty by 3.
A champion sire who continues to prove he's world class.
Tarif takes him on, and Tarif gets up to beat George Patton.
Inside the final 100 yards, horse build just going on to win the Eclipse.
Kitten's Joy, a world-class sire, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Always Dreaming is circling up on the far outside with a four-wide run, and behind them is Fast Lane Front Man in their end of the stretch, driven to compete. On the inside, Blame Will, these two, nose to nose, and here comes Always Dreaming on the outside of them, bearing down and going on by. Always Dreaming forging to the front from Blame Will, who's battling on from the inside. Oh, he's coming back! Blame Will's coming back and beat Always Dreaming on the wire. Driven to Compete was third, and then it was Rockshaw.
Larry Colmus with the call of that maiden victory for Blame Will. That was at Saratoga on August 20th, second race of the afternoon that day. Blame Will is trained by Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas, and we'll see Blame Will in action later today in the Iroquois, which is the stepping stone, the first stepping stone to the Road to the Kentucky Derby. It's the first Derby points race of this particular season. And, Jude, I thought it was interesting, as I was doing a little bit of homework there looking at the Iroquois, I noticed, and it was a little surprising to me, that Dwayne Lucas, despite all of his success, all of his greatest stakes victories, all of his champions, has never won the Iroquois.
Yeah, not totally surprising, because it's Churchill race in the fall. So back in the day when he was running stakes winner after stakes winner, you know, he was in California most of the time.
Yeah, and the, the race wasn't inaugurated till the early 80s. That's when they first started running the Iroquois. So, but even so, I thought, well, there had to be at least one win for Lucas in there somewhere in the Iroquois. And maybe Blame Will is the horse to give it to him later this afternoon.
Yeah, he's a nice horse, $600,000 Fasig Tipton August sale purchase, and run three times, never run a bad race, finished fourth, first time out in the slop. Going 5.5, ran on the turf, ran third, ran an excellent race, much better than looked race that day at Saratoga. Dropped back to 6 furlongs on the dirt, went wire to wire. He's got speed. He can carry it, obviously. And, you know, the coach, he's been on a little mini roll lately. So we'll see how
he has done. Ever since he came on Trainer Talk with us a few weeks ago, things have really heated up for Lucas.
Yeah.
We're going to take all the credit.
Well, you know, you could tell talking to him, he was in a great mood that day and very optimistic about a lot of his runners. And, you know, it's nice when you have a couple of two-year-olds in your barn that can run, and he always gets that Derby fever probably earlier than most people. So be fun to watch Blame Will.
Yeah, and some promising horses out there already on the two-year-old scene, and we'll see if others can continue to assert themselves. No doubt there will be plenty of others to come to the forefront as we move down that road to the Kentucky Derby. We asked you the poll question this morning, which you can weigh in on our Twitter feed, at HRN on Twitter, and that poll question was pretty simple. With the road to the Kentucky Derby beginning today at Churchill Downs and the road to the Breeders' Cup already in full swing, which road are you more excited about this weekend? And no surprise that as the votes continue to come in quite rapidly, actually, the road to the Breeders' Cup taking center stage, 75% of racing fans weighing in on that question, saying that they are more excited about the road to the Breeders' Cup this weekend as opposed to the road to the Kentucky Derby. But that'll change before long.
Yeah, when the Breeders' Cup's over.
When the Breeders' Cup's over. And the winner of the
Breeders'
Cup.
Didn't we go over this at the opening of the show?
Yes, but do you know how many people were not listening at the beginning of this program?
Well, I can't imagine. Most people set their alarm clock and then get up and listen to us.
And then they listen for the full 2 hours.
Absolutely. If they're
glutton for punishment.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding me?
All right. Darren Rogers is going to join us here momentarily from Churchill Downs. We'll get him on the line as we get set to take you down that road to the Breeders' Cup.
This is The Road to the Breeders' Cup.
In the race of the year, for horse of the year.
Presented by Gainsway on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And this is a race, Jude, the Iroquois, the Pocahontas, part of a program at Churchill that features four stakes races, three of those graded. Both the Iroquois and Pocahontas are graded. But those are races that are going to have an impact on the Breeders' Cup, both in the juvenile and juvenile fillies division.
No question about it. I mean, it's you know, it's that time of year. It's put up or shut up time, as I like to say, every year. And you got to watch all the prep races. Very
important. Well, in case you're wondering, we are 48 days, 4 hours, 38 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Santa Anita. We will be there on site all week long to bring you exclusive coverage of the Breeders' Cup. We've been your exclusive radio home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships now for 10 consecutive years here on HRN. And, of course, we want to encourage you to go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out that entire schedule. Darren Rogers is the Director of Communications and Media Services at Churchill. And, Darren, just in case you're wondering, now just 231 days, 8 hours, 47 minutes, well, 46 minutes and 59 seconds away from the Run for the Roses.
I follow that up. I mean, absolutely. We're counting away. We're counting away. And today, of course, kickstarts the road to the Kentucky Derby, the official road, with the launch of the prep season with the Iroquois today at Churchill, where top four finishers will earn 10, 4, 2, and 1 point respectively.
Yeah, and a bit of a new wrinkle to that road to the Kentucky Derby this year. You've got the folks in Japan involved. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we had some really good discussions with the Japanese Racing Association following the Triple Crown. And of course, Lonnie's participation brought some tremendous international excitement. In fact, on our Kentucky Derby website, there were more page views on Lonnie than any of the other horses on this year's Kentucky Derby profile. So, either way, there's tremendous international appeal. We were looking for a way to include the JRA. They were as well. And so we have two races that it's a completely separate series. That's the important thing. Partnered with two races at this time, the Cavalia Show, which is in late November. The Hyacinth will be most likely in mid to late February. The JRA will announce that probably in the month of October. They're both one-mile races on dirt at Tokyo Racecourse, prominent races over there. And the top point earner will have the opportunity within that two-race series to accept a berth and compete in the Triple Crown. There will be no travel expenses paid. The horse must be nominated to the Triple Crown. But it's a unique partnership that we hope to grow the Derby's interest more in a global aspect.
Well, and those virtually become winning your in races for the individuals who win each of those, because the first one, the Cataleya Show, well, 40 points to the winner, right? That'd be enough to get you in.
No, hold on. It's a completely separate series. It's the top point earner within those two races, Mike. So, for example...
So only one horse will qualify?
Only one horse within those two races will qualify.
Gotcha.
That's the important distinction. Yeah, we had some people, you know, why are the points so much more than the Breeders' Cup Juvenile?
Right.
No. This is a completely separate series of two races. The top point earner will receive a berth. And it was important to the JRA. They helped us decide those points. They did not want an automatic qualifier within their two. They think those two races are a good building block, and let's see who owns the who gets the most points within those two races to receive the invitation to come over.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. Makes total sense, and that to keep it separate from the American points, which but you know, people
and by the way, we don't know, Jude, how many horses, you know, would come. I mean, obviously it would be one horse, but we've only had two Japanese starters within the Triple Crown in its history. You know, Ski Captain in the mid-90s, and of course Lonnie last year. Their interest in Japan is monumental. They handle $25 billion a year on their racing. By comparison, we handle about $10 billion here in the United States. So there's a significant interest over there. Their breeding and racing is continuing to grow. And, you know, we'd like to get that international interest up a little bit.
Well, I guess that was going to lead to my next question, Darren. Is this a model, if it goes well moving forward, that we could see in other countries as well to get a horse qualified from wherever it might be, France, Ireland, wherever?
Yeah, I think, you know, the we're open to things like that. Europe is the next logical step, Mike. But the thing that's important to us is the dirt, or even maybe the synthetic aspect. And, you know, the time of racing over there in Europe with two-year-old racing going, you know, six, seven furlongs to a mile, winding down in the month of November, and then they really don't kick back up until April. So obviously we won't say, you know, we're leaving the options open, but right now obviously we're not taking that step.
Yeah, they're kind of on a whole different racing schedule than Japan.
Yeah,
and that makes a big difference. But yeah, I think Lonnie's you know, performance in all three Triple Crown races really sparked a lot of interest with Japanese owners and trainers, and they saw that you know, that it actually could be done. So it's a ideal time to take advantage of that interest and see what develops from there.
Well, Darren, tell me about the horse or horses that, in your opinion anyways, may have an opportunity to take that first step toward the first Saturday in May in that Grade 3 Iroquois later this afternoon. It's race 8, 5:59 Eastern Post. And let's make that note before we go any further. A late post today, because in Louisville, there's a few big things happening in the sports world today.
Yeah, just a little bit. currently, ESPN Game Day is broadcasting outside the stadium. First time they've showed up at the University of Louisville, and we were proud to offer up Steve Buttleman, our bugler, to help launch the show. So that was great to see at 9 a.m. You guys probably didn't see it because, you know, you're doing a little thing called a radio show. it's a lot of excitement. The game kicks off at noon to help alleviate the traffic within the area and also give those fans that are attending the game an opportunity to hopefully, for those of us here in the Ville, to have a post-game celebration. We push back post time to 2:30. We've got the 11-race program racing and goat until 7:30 tonight. And anybody over at that game today will have a chance to have free admission at Churchill Downs just by showing their ticket stub. So that's why we have a late start at 2:30. You bring up the Iroquois, which goes as race 8. That's just around 6 o'clock. Really competitive races. We get to see these horses go two turns for the first time. The horse that intrigues me the most is the bottom horse, Not This Time, for Dale Romans and the Albaugh family stable. Was an impressive winner. How good is the two-year-old racing at Ellis Park this summer? The purse money that Kentucky Downs helped fuel and strengthen the Kentucky circuit by shifting some of that over there to Ellis has left a lot of trainers to, you know, kind of keep their horses here in Kentucky and prepare them rather than going to deep waters at Saratoga. And Not This Time, I think, is a really shining example of that. Won by 10 lengths. I'm just really intrigued by him. But this is a really tough race. I mean, you're asking horses, many of which, to go two turns for the first time. But I'm giving my edge to the bottom horse.
All right, Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs with us here on the Equine Forum, taking you down the road to the Kentucky, or down the road to the Breeders' Cup, the road to the Kentucky Derby beginning today as well. Darren, stay with us for a quick minute. Have to get a word in for the sponsor of this segment, Gainesway. We'll come back and look at the Pocahontas right after this.
Power.
But Frosted has won with ease in the Whitney.
Passion.
It was Creator and Destined right on the wire, and Iran Ortiz raised his whip in victory.
Performance.
Pretty City Dancer and Sweet Loretta together in the spinaway.
Gainesway Stallion Tappet, a two-time champion sire and once again number one in 2016, more than $5 million clear on the general sire list. Tappet added to his lofty totals with two new grade one winners in the spinaway at Saratoga as his daughters, Sweet Loretta and Pretty City Dancer, dead heated for the grade one victory. And Tappet's son, Tapazar, now has a first crop stakes winner as Tip Tap Tapazar closed impressively to take Monmouth's Sapling Stakes. Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner Tapazar retired sound and is represented by 8 individual first crop two-year-old winners to date. Tappet and Tapazar standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
All right, back continuing to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs. Again, a huge, huge program on tap for this afternoon. Darren, we talked about the Iroquois. Let's focus on the Pocahontas for about 60 seconds or so. Who do you like in the Pocahontas?
Well, I gave you Not This Time from Ellis Park, a maiden winner in the Iroquois, and I'm going to stick with the Ellis Park theme. I'm going with the bottom horse again, number 10, Sully's Dream for Kellen Gorder. This was a 12-length winner. Speed figure did not come back that strong, but if you watch this race, it passes the eyeball test. I think the upside for Sully's Dream is outstanding. I'm going with number 10, Sully's Dream in the Pocahontas.
All right, before we let you go, what other things do you want people to know about racing at Churchill Downs, maybe not even this weekend, but coming up over the next several weeks?
Boy, take a look at our field sizes. I mean, it's very encouraging. Entries up over the first few days, up over 10%. The prize money is great. We'll be racing every Thursday through Sunday for the next, it'll be next two weekends. We close on the 2nd of Sunday, of October the 2nd. So next week, night racing, great race for Downs After Dark in the evening time. And then we'll conclude with a stakes triple header on closing Saturday the 1st with the Lucas Classic. And then the ACK Handicap featuring the comeback of Run Happy. That'll be exciting. By the way, Exaggerator worked this morning, guys, at the track preparing for the Pennsylvania Derby. Went 5 furlongs in 1:01. and he galloped out 6 furlongs and 13 and 3 and 7/8 and 127. So a lot to be excited about, as you know, this time of year.
He's Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs here on the Equine Forum. Darren, really appreciate the time. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we'll send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the official apparel of horse racing. We'll do that for you here shortly, my friend. Enjoy the day.
Thank you. And always good talking with you, boys. Hopefully see you soon.
All right, Darren Rogers here on HRRN. Of course, you can embrace your passion by visiting EmbraceTheRace.com. Busy show.
Yes. Can't believe it's over, no, actually.
Yeah, the 2 hours has really flown by this morning. If you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows, horseracingradio.net. And by the way, make sure you're tuned in to our website tonight at 9 Eastern as we bring you that exclusive coverage of the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks.
That'll be fun.
Who wins the Oaks?
The favorite.
Yeah.
Hate to be a chalk-eating weasel,
Castellano.
But yeah. Best horse by a long ways, actually.
All right, we want to say some thank yous to all of our guests for appearing on the program today. That's Stuart Fitzgibbon from Castleton Lions, Mark Cassie, who is here to talk about Champion Teppan and all of his big horses going to the post later today, Eric Zimney from Charlestown, and Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs. Once again, head back to our website. Check us out on social media at HRRN on Twitter, at HRRN en Español for all of you who want to hear that Spanish race coverage. And follow us along down that road to the Breeders' Cup. Our thanks to our producer, Lee Della Pina, doing a great job here in our Lexington studios. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time. And by the way, go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.